Were you involved in any of the recent kills? Gyro? Shadowblight? Earless? Maybe. I doubt Prof would want me sharing specifics. We walked in silence for a time longer. You know, I said, you're not really very entertaining.
What?
Prof told you to entertain me, I said.
That was just to deflect your questions onto someone else. I doubt you'll find anything I do to be particularly entertaining.
I wouldn't say that, I said. I liked the striptease. She glared at me.
What?
Out in the alley, I said. When you... Her expression was so frigid, you could have used it to liquid cool a high fire rate stationary gun barrel. Or maybe some drinks. Chill drinks. That was a better metaphor. I didn't think she'd appreciate me using it right then, though. Never mind, I said.
Good,
she said, turning away from me and continuing on. I breathed out, then chuckled. For a moment there, I thought you'd shoot me.
I only shoot people when the job calls for it, she said. You're trying to make small talk. You're simply not very good at it. That's not a shooting offense.
Thanks. She nodded, businesslike, which wasn't exactly the reaction I'd have hoped for from a pretty girl whose life I'd saved. Granted, she was the first girl, pretty or not, whose life I'd saved, so I didn't have much of a baseline. Still, she'd been kind of warm to me before, hadn't she? Maybe I just needed to work a little harder.
So what can you tell me, I asked, about the team or the other members? I'd prefer to discuss another topic, she said. One that doesn't involve secrets about the Reckoners or my clothing, please.
I fell silent. Truth was, I didn't know about much other than the Reckoners and the epics in town. Yes, I'd had some schooling at the factory, but only basic kinds of stuff. And before that, I'd lived a year scavenging on the streets, malnourished, barely avoiding death. I guess we could talk about the city, I said. I know a lot about the understreets.
How old are you? Megan said.
18, I said, defensive.
And is anyone going to come looking for you? Are people going to wonder where you went?
I shook my head. I hit my majority 2 months ago, got kicked out of the factory where I worked. That was the rule. You only worked there until you were 18. After that, you found another job.
You worked at a factory? She asked. For how long?
9 years or so, I said. Weapons factory, actually. Made guns for enforcement. Some understreeters, particularly the older ones, grumbled about how the factory exploited children for labor. That was a stupid complaint made by old people who remembered a different world, a safer world. In my world, people who gave you the chance to work in exchange for food were saints. Martha saw to it that her workers were fed, clothed, and protected, even from one another.
Was it nice?
Kind of. It's not slave labor like people think. We got paid. Kind of. Martha saved wages to give us when we were no longer owned by the factory. Enough to establish ourselves, find a trade. It was a good place to grow up, all things considered, I said wistfully as we walked. Without the factory, I doubt I'd have ever learned to fire a gun. The kids aren't supposed to use the weapons, but if you're good, Martha, she ran the place, turns a blind eye. More than one of her kids had gone on to work for enforcement.
That's interesting, Megan said. Tell me more.
Well, it's... I trailed off, looking at her. Only now did I realize she'd been walking along, eyes forward, barely paying attention. She was just asking things to keep me talking, maybe even to keep me from bothering her in more invasive ways. You're not even listening, I accused.
You seemed like you wanted to talk, she said curtly. I gave you the chance.
Sparks, I thought, feeling like a slant. We fell silent as we walked, which seemed to suit Megan just fine. You don't know how aggravating this is, I finally said. She gave me a glance, her emotions hidden.
Aggravating? Yes, aggravating. I've spent the last 10 years of my life studying the Reckoners and the Epics. Now that I'm with you, I'm told I'm not allowed to ask questions about important things. It's aggravating.
Think about something else.
There is nothing else, not to me.
Girls.
None.
Hobbies.
None, just you guys, Steelheart, and my notes.
Wait, she said. Notes?
Sure, I said. I worked in the factory during the days, always listening for rumors. I spent my free days spending what little money I had buying newspapers or stories off those who traveled abroad. I got to know a few information brokers. Each night, I'd work on the notes, putting it all together. I knew I'd need to be an expert on epics, so I became one. She frowned deeply. I know, I said, grimacing. It sounds like I don't have a life. You're not the first to tell me that. The others at the factory.
Hush, she said. You wrote about epics, but what about us? What about the Reckoners?
Of course I wrote it down, I said. What was I supposed to do, keep it in my head? I filled a couple notebooks, and though most of it was guesswork, I'm pretty good at guessing.
I trailed off, realizing why she looked so worried. Where is it all? She asked softly.
In my flat, I said. Should be safe. I mean, none of those goons got close enough to see me clearly.
And the woman you pulled out of her car?
I hesitated. Yeah, she saw my face. She might be able to describe me, but, I mean, that wouldn't be enough for them to track me. Right?
Megan was silent.
Yes, I thought. Yes, it might be enough. Enforcement was very good at its job, and unfortunately, I had a few incidents in my past, such as the taxi wreck. I was on file, and Steelheart would give enforcement a great deal of motivation to follow every lead regarding Fortuity's death.
We need to talk to Prof, Megan said, towing me by the arm toward where the others were walking ahead.
9. Prof listened to my explanation with thoughtful eyes.
Yes, he said as I finished. I should have seen this. It makes sense.
I relaxed. I'd been afraid he'd be furious.
What's the address, son?
Prof asked. 1532 Ditko Place, I said. It was carved into the steel around a park in one of the nicer areas of the understreets. It's small, but I live alone. I keep it locked tight.
Enforcement won't need a key, Prof said. Cody, Abraham, go to this place. Set a firebomb. Make sure nobody is inside, and blow the entire room.
I felt a sudden jolt of alarm, as if someone had hooked up my toes to a car battery.
What?
We can't have Steelheart getting that information, son, Prof said. Not just the information about us, but the information on the other epics you collected. If it's as detailed as you say, he could use it against the other powerful epics in the region. Steelheart already has too much influence. We need to destroy that intel.
You can't! I exclaimed, my voice echoing in the narrow steel-walled tunnel. Those notes were my life's work. Sure, I hadn't been around that long, but still, 10 years of effort? Losing it would be like losing a hand. Given the option, I'd rather lose the hand.
Son, Prof said, don't push me. Your place here is fragile.
You need that information, I said. It's important, sir. Why would you burn hundreds of pages of information about the powers of epics and their possible weaknesses?
You said you gathered it through hearsay, Tia said, her arms crossed. I doubt there's anything in it that we don't know already.
Do you know Nightwielder's weakness? I asked, desperate.
Nightwielder. He was one of Steelheart's high epic bodyguards, and his powers created the perpetual darkness over New Kago. He was a shadowy figure himself, completely incorporeal, immune to gunfire or weapons of any kind.
No, Tia admitted, and I doubt you do either.
Sunlight, I said. He becomes solid in sunlight. I've got pictures.
You have pictures of Nightwielder in corporeal form? Tia asked.
I think so. The person I bought them from wasn't certain, but I'm reasonably sure.
Hey, lad, Cody called. You want to buy Loch Ness from me? I'll give you a good price.
I glared at him, and he just shrugged. Loch Ness was in Scotland, I knew that much, and it seemed that the crest on Cody's cap might be some kind of Scottish or English deal, but his accent didn't match.
Prof, I said, turning back to him. Phaedrus, sir, please. You have to see my plan.
Your plan?
He didn't seem surprised that I'd worked out his name.
For killing Steelheart.
You have a plan? Prof asked. For killing the most powerful epic in the country?
That's what I told you before.
I thought you wanted to join us to get us to do it.
I need help, I said. But I didn't come empty-handed. I've got a detailed plan. I think it will work.
Prof just shook his head, looking bemused. Suddenly, Abraham laughed.
I like him. He has something. Un homme demeurer. You sure we aren't recruiting, Prof?
Yes,
Prof said flatly.
At least look at my plan before you burn it, I said. Please?
John, Tia said, I'd like to see these pictures. They're likely fake, but even so.
Fine,
Prof said, tossing something to me. The magazine for my rifle.
Change of plans. Cody, you take Megan and the boy and go to his place. If enforcement is there and looks like they're going to take this information, destroy it. But if the site looks safe, bring it back.
He eyed me.
Whatever you can't carry easily, destroy. Understood?
Sure, Cody said.
Thank you, I said.
It's not a favor, son, Prof said. And I hope it's not a mistake, either. Go on. We may not have much time before they track you.
It was getting quiet in the understreets by the time we neared Ditko Place. You'd think that with the perpetual darkness, there wouldn't really be a day or a night in New Cago. But there is. People tend to want to sleep when everyone else sleeps, so we settle into routines. Of course, there are a minority who don't like to do as told, even when it comes to something simple. I was one of those. Being up all night means being awake when everyone else is sleeping. It's quieter, more private. The ceiling lights were set to a clock somewhere, and they colored to deeper shades when it was night. The change was subtle, but we learned to notice it. So, even though Ditko Place was near the surface, there wasn't much motion on the streets. People were sleeping. We arrived at the park, a large underground chamber carved from the steel. It had numerous holes in the ceiling for fresh air, and blue-violet lights shone from spotlights around the rim. The center of the tall chamber was cluttered with rocks brought in from outside. Real rocks, not ones that had been turned to steel. There was also wooden playground equipment, moderately well-maintained, that had been scavenged from somewhere. In the daytime, the place would fill with children. The ones too young to work, or the ones with families who could afford not to have them work. Old women and men would gather to knit socks or do other simple work. Megan raised her hand to still us.
Mobiles, she whispered.
Cody sniffed.
Do I look like some amateur? He asked. It's on silent.
I hesitated, then took mine off the place on my shoulder and double-checked. Fortunately, it was on silent. I took out the battery anyway, just in case. Megan moved quietly out the tunnel and across the park toward the shadow of a large rock. Cody went next. Then I followed, keeping low and moving as quietly as I could, passing large stones growing lichen. Up above, a few cars rumbled by on the roadway that ran past the openings in the ceiling. Late-night commuters heading home. Sometimes they'd throw trash down on us. A surprising number of the rich still had ordinary jobs. Accountants, teachers, salesmen, computer technicians.
though Steelheart's datanet was open only to his most trusted. I'd never seen a real computer, just my mobile. It was a different world above, and jobs that had once been common were now held by only the privileged. The rest of us worked factories or sewed clothing in the park while watching children play. I reached the rock and crouched beside Cody and Megan, who were stealthily inspecting the two far walls of the chamber where the dwellings were cut. Dozens of holes in the steel provided homes of various sizes. Metal fire escapes had been harvested from unused buildings above and set up here to give access to the holes.
"So, which one is it?" Cody asked.
I pointed. "See that door on the second level, far right? That's it."
"Nice," Cody said. "How'd y'all afford a place like this?"
He asked it casually, but I could tell that he was suspicious. They all were. Well, I suppose that was to be expected. "I needed a room by myself for my research," I said. "The factory where I worked saves all of your wages when you're a kid, then gives them to you in 4 yearly chunks when you hit 18. It was enough to get me a year in my own room."
"Cool,"
Cody said. I wondered if my explanation passed his test or not. "It doesn't look like enforcement has made it here yet. Maybe they couldn't match you from the description." I nodded slowly, though beside me Megan was looking around, her eyes narrowed. "What?" I asked.
"It looks too easy. I don't trust things that look too easy."
I scanned the far walls. There were a few empty trash bins and some motorbikes chained up beside a stairwell. Some chunks of metal had been etched by enterprising street artists. They weren't supposed to do that, but the people encouraged them, quietly. It was one of the only forms of rebellion the common people ever engaged in.
"Well, we can wait here staring until they do come," Cody said, rubbing his face with a leathery finger. "Or we can just go. Let's be on with it."
He stood up. One of the large trash bins shimmered.
"Wait,"
I said, grabbing Cody and pulling him down, my heart leaping.
"What?"
he said, anxious, unslinging his rifle. It was of a very fine make, old but well-maintained, with a large scope and a state-of-the-art suppressor on the front. I'd never been able to get my hands on one of those. The cheaper ones worked poorly, and I found it too hard to aim with them.
"There," I said, pointing at the trash bin. "Watch it."
He frowned but did what I asked. My mind raced, sorting through fragments of remembered research. I needed my notes. Shimmering, illusionist epic. Who was that? Refractionary, I thought, seizing on a name. A Class C illusionist with personal invisibility capabilities.
"What am I watching for?" Cody asked. "Did you get spooked by a cat or something?"
He cut off as the bin shimmered again. Cody frowned, then crouched down farther.
"What is that?"
"An epic," Megan said, her eyes narrowing. "Some of the lesser epics with illusion powers have trouble maintaining an exact illusion."
"Her name is Refractionary," I said softly. "She's pretty skilled, capable of creating complex visual manifestations, but she's not terribly powerful, and her illusions always have tells to them. Usually they shimmer as if light is reflecting off them." Cody aimed his rifle, sighting on the trash bin.
"So you're saying that bin isn't really there. It's hiding something else. Enforcement officers, probably?"
"I'd guess so," I said.
"Can she be harmed by bullets, lad?"
Cody asked. "Yes, she's not a high epic. But Cody, she might not be in there."
"You just said..."
"She's a Class C illusionist," I explained. "But her secondary power is Class B personal invisibility. Illusions and invisibility often go hand in hand. Anyway, she can make herself invisible, but not anything else. Others, she has to create an illusion around. I'd be certain she's hiding an enforcement squad in that fake trash bin illusion. But if she's smart, and she is, she'll be somewhere else." I felt an itch in the small of my back. I hated illusionist epics. You never know where they'd be.
Even the weakest of them, class D or E by my own notation system, could make an illusion big enough for themselves to hide in. If they had personal invisibility, it was even worse.
There,
Megan whispered, pointing toward a large piece of playground equipment, a kind of wooden fort for climbing.
See those boxes on the top of the playground tower? They just shimmered. Someone's hiding in them.
That's only big enough for one person, I whispered. From that position, whoever is there could see right into my apartment through the door. Sniper?
Most likely, Megan said.
Refractionary is close then, I said.
She'll need to be able to see both that playground equipment and the fake garbage bins to keep the illusions going. The range in her powers isn't great. How do we draw her out? Megan asked.
She likes to be involved, from what I remember, I said. If we can get the enforcement soldiers to move, she'll stay close to them, in case she needs to give orders to make illusions to support them.
Sparks, Cody whispered. How do you know all of this, lad?
Weren't you listening? Megan asked softly. This is what he does. It's what he has built his life around. He studies them.
Cody stroked his chin. He looked as if he'd assumed everything I said before was bravado.
You know her weakness?
It's in my notes, I said. I'm trying to remember. Well, illusionists usually can't see if they turn themselves completely invisible. They need light to strike their irises, so you can watch for the eyes. But a really skilled illusionist can make their eyes match the color of their surroundings. But that's not really her weakness, more a limitation of illusions themselves.
What was it?
Smoke! I exclaimed, then blushed at the sound of it. Megan shot me a glare.
It's her weakness, I whispered. She always avoids people who are smoking and stays away from any kind of fire. It's pretty well known and reasonably substantiated as far as epic weaknesses go.
Guess we're back to starting the place on fire after all,
Cody said. He seemed excited by the prospect.
What? No,
Prof said.
We can still get the information, I said. They're waiting for me, but they only sent a minor epic. That means they want me, but they haven't sorted through that the Reckoners were behind the assassination tonight. Or maybe they don't know how I was involved. They probably haven't cleaned out my room yet, even if they did break in and scan through what's there.
Excellent reason to burn the place, Megan said. I'm sorry, but if they're that close.
But see, it's essential that we go in now, I said, growing more anxious. We have to see what has been disturbed, if anything. That'll tell us what they've discovered. We burn the place down now, and we blind ourselves. The other two hesitated. We can stop them, I said. And we might be able to kill us an epic in the process. Refractionary has plenty of blood on her hands. Just last month, someone cut her off in traffic. She created an illusion of the road turning up ahead and drove the offender off the freeway into a home. 6 dead. Children were in the car.
Epics had a distinct, even incredible, lack of morals or conscience. That bothered some people on a philosophical level. Theorists, scholars. They wondered at the sheer inhumanity many epics manifested. Did the epics kill because calamity chose, for whatever reason, only terrible people to gain powers? Or did they kill because such amazing power twisted a person, made them irresponsible? There were no conclusive answers. I didn't care. I wasn't a scholar. Yes, I did research, but so did a sports fan when he followed his team. It didn't matter to me why the epics did what they did any more than a baseball fan wondered at the physics of a bat hitting a ball. Only one thing mattered. Epics gave no thought for ordinary human life. A brutal murder was a fitting retribution in their minds for the most minor of infractions.
Prof didn't approve hitting an epic, Megan said. This isn't in the procedures.
Cody chuckled.
Killing an epic is always in the procedures, lass. You just haven't been with us long enough to understand.
I have a smoke grenade in my room, I said.
What?
Megan asked.
How?
I grew up working at a munitions plant, I said.
We mostly made rifles and handguns, but we worked with other factories. I got to pick up the occasional goodie from the QC reject pile.
A smoke grenade is a goodie?
Cody asked. I frowned. What did he mean? Of course it was. Who wouldn't want a smoke grenade when offered one? Megan actually showed the faintest of smiles. She understood. I don't get you, girl, I thought. She carried explosives in her shirt and was an excellent shot, but she was worried about procedures when she got a chance to kill an epic? And as soon as she caught me looking at her, her expression grew cold and aloof once again. Had I done something to offend her?
If we can get that grenade, I can use it to negate Refractionary's powers, I said. She likes to stay near her teams, so if we can draw the soldiers into an enclosed space, she'll probably follow. I can blow the grenade, then shoot her when it makes her appear.
Good enough, Cody said. But how are we going to manage all of that and get your notes?
Easy, I said, reluctantly handing my rifle to Megan. I'd have a better chance of fooling them if I wasn't armed. We give them the thing they're waiting for. Me.
10. I crossed the street toward my flat, hands in the pockets of my jacket, fingering the roll of industrial tape I usually kept there. The other two hadn't liked my plan, but they hadn't come up with anything better. Hopefully they'd be able to fulfill their parts in it. I felt completely naked without my rifle. I had a couple of handguns stashed in my room, but a man wasn't really dangerous unless he had a rifle. At least, he wasn't consistently dangerous. Hitting something with a handgun always felt like an accident. Megan did it, I thought. She not only hit, but hit a high epic in the middle of a dodge, firing two guns at once, one from the hip. She'd shown emotion during our fight with Fortuity. Passion, anger, annoyance. The second two toward me, but it had been something. And then for a few moments after he fell, there'd been a connection, satisfaction, and appreciation of me that had come out when she'd spoken on my behalf to Prof. Now that was gone. What did it mean? I stopped at the edge of the playground. Was I really thinking about a girl now? I was only about 5 paces from where a group of enforcement officers were hiding, probably with automatic or energy weapons trained on me. Idiot, I thought, heading up the metal stairway toward my apartment. They'd wait to see if I got out anything incriminating before grabbing me. Hopefully. Climbing steps like that, with my back to the enemy, was excruciating. I did what I always did when I grew afraid. I thought of my father falling, bleeding beside that pillar in the broken bank lobby while I hid. I hadn't helped. I would never be that coward again. I reached the door to my apartment, then fiddled with the keys. I heard a distant scrape, but pretended not to notice. That would be the sniper on top of the playground equipment nearby repositioning to aim at me. Yes, from this angle I saw for certain. That playground piece was just tall enough that the sniper would be able to shoot through the door into my apartment. I stepped inside my single room. No hallways or anything else. Just a hole cut into the steel, like most dwellings in the understreets. It might not have had a bathroom or running water, but I was still living quite well, by understreet standards. A whole room for a single person? I kept it messy. Some old, disposable noodle bowls sat in a pile beside the door, smelling of spice. Clothing was strewn across the floor. I had a bucket of 2-day-old water sitting on the table, and dirty, beat-up silverware sat in a pile beside it. I didn't use those to eat. They were for show. So was the clothing. I didn't wear any of it. My actual clothing, 4 sturdy outfits always clean and washed, was folded in the trunk beside my mattress on the floor. I kept my room messy intentionally. It actually itched at me, as I liked things neat. I'd found that sloppiness put people off guard. If my landlady came snooping up here, she'd find what she expected. A teenager just into his majority, blowing his earnings on an easy life for a year before responsibility hit him. She wouldn't poke or prod for secret compartments. I hurried to the trunk,
I unlocked it and pulled out my backpack, already packed with a change of clothing, spare shoes, some dry rations, and 2 liters of water. There was a handgun in a pouch on one side, and the smoke grenade was in a pouch on the other side. I walked to my mattress and unzipped the case. Inside was my life. Dozens of folders filled with clippings from newspapers or scraps of information. 8 notebooks filled with my thoughts and findings. A larger notebook with my indexes. Maybe I should have brought all of this with me when going to watch the Fortuity hit. After all, I'd hoped to leave with the Reckoners. I'd debated it, but I'd eventually decided that it wouldn't be reasonable. There was so much of it, for one thing. I could lug it all if I needed to, but it slowed me down. And it was just too precious. This research was the most valuable thing in my life. Collecting some of it had nearly gotten me killed. Spying on epics, asking questions better left unasked, making payments to shady informants? I was proud of it, not to mention frightened about what might happen to it. I thought it safer here. Boots shook the metal landing of the stairway outside. I looked over my shoulder and saw one of the most feared sights in the understreets. Fully geared enforcement officers. They stood on the landing, automatic rifles in their hands, sleek black helmets on their heads, military-grade armor on their chests, knees, arms. There were 3 of them. Their helmets had black visors that came down over their eyes, leaving their mouths and chins exposed. The eye shields gave them night vision and glowed faintly green, with a strange smoky pattern that swirled and undulated across the front. It was transfixing, which was said to be the point. I didn't need to act to make my eyes go wide. My muscles taut.
"Hands on your head,"
the lead officer said, rifle up at his shoulder and the barrel trained on me.
"Down on your knees, subject."
That was what they called people, subject. Steelheart didn't bother with any kind of silly pretense that his empire was a republic or a representative government. He didn't call people citizens or comrades. They were subjects of his empire. That was that. I quickly raised my hands.
"I didn't do anything," I whined. "I was just there to watch."
"Hands up, knees down," the officer yelled.
I complied. They entered the room, leaving the doorway conspicuously open so that their sniper had a view through the door. From what I'd read, these 3 would be part of a 5-person squad known as a corps. 3 regular troops, 1 specialist, in this case a sniper, and 1 minor epic. Steelheart had about 50 corps like this. Almost all of enforcement was made of special operations teams. If there was any large-scale fighting to be done, something very dangerous, Steelheart, Nightwielder, Firefight, or maybe Comflux, who was head of enforcement, would deal with it personally. Enforcement was used for the smaller problems in the city, the ones Steelheart didn't want to bother with himself. In a way, he didn't need enforcement. They were like a homicidal dictator's version of valet parking attendants. One of the 3 soldiers kept an eye on me while the other 2 rifled through the contents of my mattress. Is she in here? I wondered. Invisible somewhere? My instinct and my memory of researching her told me she'd be near. I just had to hope she was in the room. I couldn't move until Cody and Megan fulfilled their part of my plan, though, so I waited, tense, for them to do so. The 2 soldiers pulled notebooks and folders out from between the 2 pieces of foam that made up my mattress. One flipped through the notes.
"This is information on epics, sir," he said.
"I thought I'd be able to see Fortuity fight another epic," I said, staring at the floor. "When I found out something terrible was happening, I tried to get away. I was only there to see what would happen, you know?" The officer began looking through the notebooks. The soldier watching me seemed uncomfortable about something. He kept glancing at me, then at the others. I felt my heart thumping, waiting. Megan and Cody would attack soon. I had to be ready.
"You are in serious trouble, subject,"
the officer said, tossing one of my notebooks to the floor.
"An epic and an important one is dead."
"I didn't have anything to do with it,"
I said. I swear, I...
Bah!
The lead officer pointed toward one of the other soldiers.
Gather this up.
Sir, said the soldier watching me. He's probably telling the truth.
I hesitated. That voice. Roy? I said, shocked. He'd hit majority the year before me and had joined enforcement after that. The officer glanced back at me.
You know this subject?
Yes,
Roy said, sounding reluctant. He was a tall redhead. I'd always liked him. He'd been an adjunct at the factory, which was a position Martha gave to senior boys. They were meant to stop the young or weaker workers from being picked on. He'd done his job well.
You didn't say anything?
The lead officer said, his voice hard.
Sir, I'm sorry. I should have. He's always had a fascination with epics. I've seen him cross half the city on foot and wait in the rain just because he heard a new epic might be passing through town. If he heard something about two of them fighting, he'd have gone to watch, whether it was a good idea or not.
Sounds exactly like the kind of person who should be off the streets, the officer said. Gather this. Son, you're going to come tell us exactly what you saw. If you do a good job, perhaps you might even live through the night.
A
gunshot sounded outside. The officer's face blossomed red, the front of his helmet exploding as a bullet hit him. I rolled toward my backpack. Cody and Megan had done their job, quietly taking down the sniper and getting into position to support me. I ripped open the Velcro on the side of my pack and pulled out my handgun, then fired rapidly at Roy's thighs. The bullets hit an open spot in his advanced plastic armor, dropping him, though I almost missed, sparking pistols. The other soldier fell to a well-placed shot from Cody, who would be on that playground equipment outside. I didn't stop to make sure the third soldier was dead. Refractionary might be in the room, armed and ready to shoot. I pulled out the smoke grenade and removed the pin. I dropped the grenade. A burst of gray smoke jetted from the canister, filling the room. I held my breath, handgun up. Refractionary's powers would be negated when the smoke touched her. I waited for her to appear. Nothing happened. She wasn't in the room. Smothering a curse, still holding my breath, I glanced at Roy. He was trying to move, holding his leg and trying to point his rifle toward me. I leaped through the smoke and kicked the rifle aside. Then I pulled his sidearm out of its holster and tossed it. Both guns would be useless to me. They'd be keyed to his gloves. Roy's hand was in his pocket. I put my gun to his temple and yanked his hand out. He'd been trying to dial his mobile. I cocked the gun, and he dropped the mobile.
It's too late anyway, David, Roy spat, then started coughing at the smoke. Conflux will know the moment we go offline. Other corps are on their way here. They'll send spying eyes down to watch. Those are probably already here.
Breath still held, I checked the pockets on his cargo pants. There were no other weapons.
You're being a fool, David, Roy said, coughing.
I ignored him and scanned the room. I had to start breathing, and the smoke was getting overpowering. Where was Refractionary? On the landing, maybe. I kicked the smoke grenade out, hoping she was there. Nothing. Either I had her weakness wrong, or she decided not to join her team in coming to get me. What if she was sneaking up on Megan and Cody? They'd never see her coming. I glanced down. Roy's mobile. Worth a try. I snatched the phone and opened the address book. Refractionary was listed under her epic name. Most epics preferred to use them. I dialed. Almost immediately, a gunshot sounded from the playground outside. I couldn't hold my breath any longer. I ducked outside, staying low, and kicked the smoke grenade off the landing. I started down the stairwell and took a deep breath. Then, eyes watering, I scanned the playground. Cody knelt on top of the playground equipment, rifle out. At the base of the tower, Megan stood with her gun out, a body in black and yellow at her feet. Refractionary.
Megan fired again into the body just to be certain, but the woman was obviously dead. Another epic eliminated.
11. My first move was to go back in and toss Roy's rifle, which he had been crawling toward, out the door. Then I checked on the two other soldiers. One was dead, the other had a weak pulse. But he wasn't going to be waking anytime soon. Time to move quickly. I pulled the notebooks from my mattress and stuffed them in my backpack. 6 thick notebooks and 1 index caused the backpack to bulge. I thought for a moment, then took my extra pair of shoes out of the pack. I could buy new shoes, but I couldn't replace these notebooks. The last 2 fit, and beside them, I slid the folders about Steelheart, Nightwielder, and Firefight. After a moment, I added the one about Conflux. It was the thinnest. Very little was known about the clandestine high epic who ran enforcement. Roy was still coughing, though the smoke had cleared out. He pulled off his helmet. It was surreal to see that familiar face, one I'd known for years, wearing the uniform of the enemy. We hadn't been friends, I didn't really have those, but I'd looked up to him.
"You working with the Reckoners?" Roy said.
I needed to try to lay down a false trail, get him to think I was working for someone else. "What?" I said, doing my best to look baffled.
"Don't try to hide it, David. It's obvious. Everyone knows the Reckoners hit Fortuity."
I knelt down beside him, pack slung over my shoulder.
"Look, Roy, don't let them heal you, okay? I know enforcement has epics who can do that. Don't let them, if you can manage it."
"What?
Why?"
"You want to be laid out sick for this next part, Roy," I said softly, intensely. "Power is going to change hands in New Cago. Limelight is coming for Steelheart."
"Limelight?" Roy said. "Who the hell is that?"
I walked over to the rest of my folders, then reluctantly took a can of lighter fluid from my trunk and poured it on the bed.
"You're working for an epic?" Roy whispered. "You really think anyone can challenge Steelheart? Sparks, David. How many rivals has he killed?"
"This is different," I said, then got out some matches. "Limelight is different." I lit the match. I couldn't take the remaining folders. They were source material, facts and articles for the information I'd collected in my notebooks. I wanted to take them, but there was no more room in my bag. I dropped the match. The bed started aflame. "One of your friends might still be alive," I said to Roy, nodding to the 2 enforcement officers who were down. The leader had been shot in the head, but the other one only in the side. "Get him out. Then stay out of things, Roy. Dangerous days are coming." I slung the pack over my shoulder and hastened out the door and onto the stairwell. I met Megan on the way down the steps.
"Your plan failed," she said quietly.
"Worked well enough," I said. "An epic is dead."
"Only because she left her mobile on vibrate," Megan said, hurrying down the steps beside me. "If she hadn't been sloppy..."
"We were lucky," I agreed. "But we still won." Mobiles were just a part of daily life. The people might live in hovels, but they all had a mobile for entertainment. We met Cody at the base of the playground tower near Refractionary's corpse. He handed back my rifle.
"Lad," he said, "that was awesome."
I blinked. I'd been expecting another berating, like Megan had given me.
"Prof is going to be jealous he didn't come himself," Cody said, slinging his rifle over his shoulder.
"Were you the one who called her?"
"Yeah," I said.
"Awesome,"
Cody said again, slapping me on the back. Megan didn't look nearly as pleased. She gave Cody a sharp look, then reached for my pack. I resisted.
"You need 2 hands for the rifle," she said, pulling it free and slinging it over her shoulder. "Let's move. Enforcement will..."
She trailed off as she noticed Roy barely managing to tow the other enforcement officer out of the burning room and onto the landing. I felt bad, but only a little.
Copters were thumping above. He'd have help soon. We scurried across the park, heading toward the tunnels that led deeper into the understreets.
You left them alive? Megan asked as we ran.
This was more useful, I said. I laid us a false trail. I told him a lie that I was working for an epic who wants to challenge Steelheart. Hopefully it will keep them from searching for the Reckoners, I hesitated. Besides, they're not our enemies.
Of course they are, she snapped.
No, Cody said, jogging beside her. He's right, lass. They aren't. They may work for the enemy, but they're just regular folks. They do what they can to get by.
We can't think like that, she said as we reached a branching tunnel. She glared at me, eyes cold. We can't show them mercy. They won't show it to us.
We can't become them, lass, Cody said, shaking his head. Listen to Prof talk about it sometime. If we have to do what the epics do to beat them, then it's not worth it.
I've heard him talk, she said, still looking at me. I'm not worried about him. I'm worried about knees here.
I'll shoot an enforcement officer if I have to, I said, meeting her eyes. But I won't get distracted hunting them down. I have a goal. I'll see Steelheart dead. That is all that matters.
Bah, she said, turning away from me. That's not an answer.
Let's keep moving, Cody said, nodding toward a stairwell down to deeper tunnels. He's a scientist, lad, Cody explained, as we walked through the narrow corridors of the steel catacombs. Studied epics in the early days, created some pretty remarkable devices based on what we learned from them. That's why he's called Prof, other than that last name thing.
I nodded thoughtfully. Now that we were deep, Cody had relaxed. Megan was still stiff. She walked ahead, holding her mobile and using it to send Prof a report on the mission. Cody had his set to flashlight, hooked to the upper left of his camo jacket. I'd removed the network card from mine, which he said was a good idea until Abraham or Tia had a chance to tweak it. It turned out that they didn't trust even the Nighthawk foundry. The Reckoners usually left their mobiles linked only to one another, and had the transmissions encrypted on both ends, not using the regular network. Until I got the encryption too, I could at least use my mobile as a camera or a glorified flashlight. Cody walked with a relaxed posture, rifle up on his shoulder, arm looped over it, and hand hanging down. I seemed to have earned his approval with Refractionary's death.
So, where did he work?
I asked, hungry for information about Prof. There were so many rumors about the Reckoners, but few real facts.
Don't know, Cody admitted. Nobody's sure what Prof's past is, though Tia probably knows something. She doesn't talk about it. Abe and I have bets going about what Prof's specific workplace was. I'm pretty sure he was at some kind of secret government organization.
Really?
I asked.
Sure, Cody said. I wouldn't be surprised if it was the same one that caused Calamity.
That was one of the theories, that the United States government, or sometimes the European Union, had somehow set off Calamity while trying to start a superhuman project. I thought it was pretty far-fetched. I'd always figured it was some kind of comet that got caught in Earth's gravity, but I didn't know if the science of that made any sense. Maybe it was a satellite. That could fit Cody's theory. He wouldn't be the only one who thought it reeked of conspiracy. There were a lot of things about the epics that didn't add up.
Oh, you got that look, Cody said, pointing at me.
That look?
Y'all think I'm crazy.
No, no, of course not.
You do. Well, it's okay. I know what I know, even if Prof rolls his eyes whenever I say anything about it.
Cody smiled.
But that's another story. As for Prof's line of work, I think it must have been some kind of weapons facility. He created the tensors, after all.
The tensors? Prof wouldn't want you talking about that, Megan said, looking over her shoulder. Nobody gave authorization for him to know about it, she added, glancing at me.
I'm giving it, Cody said, relaxed. He's going to see anyway, lass. And don't quote Prof's rules at me.
She closed her mouth. She looked like she'd been about to do just that.
The tensors? I asked again.
Something Prof invented, Cody said. Either right before or right after he left the lab. He's got a couple of things like that. Inventions that give us our main edge against the epics. Our jackets are one of those. They can take a lot of punishment, and the tensors are another.
But what are they?
Gloves, Cody said. Well, devices in the form of gloves. They create vibrations that disrupt solid objects. Works best on dense stuff like stone and metal, some kinds of wood. Turns that kind of material to dust, but won't do anything to a living animal or person.
You're kidding. In all my years of research, I'd never heard of any technology like that.
Nope, Cody said. They're difficult to use, though. Abraham and Tia are the most skilled. But you'll see. The tensors, they let us go where we're not supposed to be. Where we're not expected to be.
That's amazing, I said, my mind racing. The Reckoners did have a reputation for being able to get where nobody thought they could. There were stories. Epics killed in their own chambers, well guarded and presumed safe. Near magical escapes by the Reckoners. A device that could turn stone and metal to powder? You could get through locked doors regardless of the security devices. You could sabotage vehicles, maybe even knock down buildings. Suddenly, some of the most baffling mysteries surrounding the Reckoners made sense to me. How they'd gotten in to trap Daystorm. How they'd escaped the time when calling war had nearly cornered them. They'd have to be clever about how they entered, so as not to leave obvious holes that gave them away. But I could see how it would work.
But why, I asked, dazed. Why are you telling me this?
As I said, lad, Cody explained. You're going to see them at work soon anyway. Might as well prepare you for it. Besides, you already know so much about us that one more thing won't matter.
Okay. I said it lightly, then caught the somber tone of his voice. He'd left something unsaid. I already knew so much that I couldn't be allowed to go free. Prof had given me my chance to leave. I'd insisted they bring me. At this point, I either convinced them utterly that I wasn't a threat and joined them, or they left me behind, dead. I swallowed uncomfortably, my mouth suddenly dry. I asked for this, I told myself sternly. I'd known that once I joined them, if I joined them, I wouldn't ever be leaving. I was in, and that was that. So, I tried to force myself not to dwell on the fact that this man, or any of them, might someday decide I needed to be shot in the name of the common good. So how did he figure these gloves out? The tensors? I've never heard of anything like them.
Epics, Cody said, his voice growing amiable again. Prof let it drop once. The technology came from studying an epic who could do something similar. Tia says it happened in the early days before society collapsed. Some epics were captured and held. Not all of them are so powerful they can escape captivity with ease. Different labs ran tests on them, trying to figure out how their powers worked. The technology for things like the tensors came from those days.
I hadn't heard that, and some things started to click into place for me. We'd made great advances in technology back then, right around the arrival of Calamity. Energy weapons, advanced power sources and batteries, new mobile technology, which was why ours worked underground and at a significant range without using towers. Of course, we lost much of it when the epics started to take over. And what we didn't lose, epics like Steelheart controlled. I tried to imagine those early epics being tested. Was that why so many were evil? They resented this testing? Did any of them go to the testing willingly? I asked. How many labs were doing this?
I don't know, Cody said. I reckon it's not very important.
Why wouldn't it be? Cody shrugged, rifle still over his shoulder, the light of his mobile illuminating the tomb-like metal corridor. The catacombs smelled of dust and condensation.
Tia is always talking about the scientific foundation of the epics, he said. I don't think they can be explained that way. Too much about them breaks what science says should happen. I sometimes wonder if they came along because we thought we could explain everything.
It didn't take much longer for us to arrive. I'd noticed that Megan was leading us by way of her mobile, which showed a map on its screen. That was remarkable. A map of the steel catacombs? I didn't think such a thing existed.
Here, Megan said, waving to a thick patch of wires hanging down like a curtain in front of a wall. Sights like that were common down here, where the diggers had left things unfinished. Cody walked up and banged on a plate near the wires. A distant bang came back at him a few moments later.
In you go, knees, he said to me, gesturing toward the wires.
I took a breath and stepped forward, pushing them aside with the barrel of my rifle. There was a small tunnel beyond, leading steeply upward. I would have to crawl. I looked back at him.
It's safe, he promised.
I couldn't tell if he was making me go first because of some latent mistrust or because he liked seeing me squirm. It didn't seem the time to question him or back down. I started crawling. The tunnel was small enough to make me worry that if I slung my rifle on my back, a good scrape stood a chance of knocking the scope or sights out of alignment. So I kept it in my right hand as I crawled, which made it all the more awkward. The tunnel led toward a distant, soft light, and the crawl took long enough that my knees were aching by the time I reached the light. A strong hand took me by the left arm, helping me out of the tunnel. Abraham. The dark-skinned man had changed into cargo pants and a green tank top, which showed well-muscled arms. I hadn't noticed before, but he was wearing a small silver pendant around his neck, hanging out of his shirt. The room I stepped into was unexpectedly large, big enough for the team to have laid out their equipment in several bedrolls without it feeling cramped. There was a large table made of metal that grew right out of the floor, as well as benches at the walls and stools around the table. They carved it there, I realized, looking at the sculpted walls. They made this room with the tensors, carved furniture right into it. It was impressive. I gawked as I stepped back and let Abraham help Megan out of the tunnel. The chamber had two doorways into other rooms that looked smaller. It was lit by lanterns, and there were cords on the floor, taped in place and out of the way, leading down another small tunnel.
You have electricity, I said. How did you get electricity?
Tapped into an old subway line, Cody said, crawling out of the tunnel. One that was half completed, then forgotten about. The nature of this place is that even Steelheart doesn't know all of its nooks and dead ends.
Just more proof the diggers were mad, Abraham said. They wired things in strange ways. We found rooms that were sealed completely, but had lights left on the inside, shining for years by themselves. Repair des fantômes. Megan tells me,
Prof said, appearing from one of the other rooms,
that you recovered the information, but that your means were unconventional.
The aging but sturdy man still wore his black lab coat.
Hell yeah,
Cody said, shouldering his rifle. Prof snorted.
Well, let's see what you recovered before I decide if I should yell at you or not.
He reached for the backpack in Megan's hand.
Actually, I said, stepping toward it, I can-
You'll sit down, son, Prof said. While I have a look at this, all of it, then we'll talk.
His voice was calm, but I got the message. I pensively sat down beside the steel table as the others gathered around the pack and began rifling through my life. 12.
Wow, Cody said. Honestly, lad, I thought you were exaggerating. But y'all really are a full-blown super geek, aren't you?
I blushed, still sitting on